So I trust you all had a good night's rest. It's always much nicer sleeping in the forest, isn't it? When I'm not in Perth here in the monastery, I'm usually in Sydney or some other place where I stay in the city, and you kind of feel the difference of the kind of the energy that's kind of all around you. So last night I talked about some of the basics, the groundwork that we should be developing in any meditation retreat. So we've all come a, given up a lot to be here. We've all renounced the world. Maybe only temporarily, but still, that's quite a lot. All of the different things that we could have been doing this weekend. And yet we've chosen to not do any of those things and to come together to practice Dhamma. So that's a huge force of renunciation and letting go, which you've already got that under your belt just by being here. And then on top of that, we're also keeping very good precepts while we're staying here. Not killing anything, not stealing anything, being very restrained and careful. So that also is a tremendous force for goodness and for purifying the mind. But not only that, we're also trying to practice meditation. We're also spending time here in the meditation hall, listening to Dhamma, doing the chanting, trying to be mindful and restrained in what we do, trying to be careful and considerate to the people around us. So these also really wonderful and powerful good qualities that you're already developing. So you don't even need to bother really meditating. You're already doing so much. I didn't really mean that. But there is some truth to it. And you know, when I talk to people, they say something like, oh, you know, my practice is no good. Right? I say, well, what do you mean by your practice is no good? And you say, you're here in the monastery, you're listening to Dhamma talks, so this is the right view of the Noble Eightfold Path that you're working on, that's part of your practice. And then I ask them, are you somebody who tries to be kind to people? Do you try to be compassionate? Do you try to be not too greedy and attached to things? And they say, yeah, I do that. Well, that's right intention of the Noble Eightfold Path. And then I say, well, do you try to use your speech wisely? Do you try to speak the truth and be honest and helpful? And they say, yeah, I do that. Okay, well, that's right speech of the Noble Eightfold Path. Right? What about killing things? Are you a murderer? Usually they say no. You can't try to keep your precepts. So this is the right action of the Eightfold Path. And what about your livelihood? Yeah? Do you have a job that is honest and where you try to do good work that's actually useful and make an honest living? Yeah? Sometimes that one can be a bit of a struggle. It depends what our job is. But most of the time, people say yes, they do. So that's already five factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. That's five out of eight that you're already doing, even before you've even thought about sitting in meditation. Right? And people say, oh no, I don't have any practice. My practice is no good. Yeah? So meditation isn't the whole of your practice. Meditation is like the cream of your practice. Meditation is the most refined and most powerful part of the Noble Eightfold Path. It's what happens when all of the other factors of the Noble Eightfold Path are there, and you want to take it further, and when you want to deepen everything, you want to go to the next level. And so remember that when we're doing this practice of meditation, it is something that's very subtle. I don't think it's helpful to think of meditation as difficult. I don't think meditation is difficult. I think it's easy. But it certainly is subtle. Yeah? And it's something which the great sages, the great yogis, the great monks and nuns, the great enlightened masters of the past have put a lot of time into, a lot of effort, a lot of care in order to be able to see the depths of where meditation can take you. So when we come to a retreat like this, we don't expect too much. We're just making a beginning. And so if you can find a bit of peace, a bit of self-awareness, then you're doing pretty well already. That's already much more than a lot of people can ever find in their life. So last night I talked about the qualities to develop on the meditation retreat. And I talked about mindfulness, both in the meditation and also in how we are moving, eating, going to the bathroom. So we try to keep that continuity. Remember, I talked about mindfulness as a continuity of awareness. And a continuity of awareness in the present. So again, this attitude of the present as being a gift, something precious, and something that's just there. And I also talked about this value of equanimity, which is very important when we're developing meditation. That ability to watch and to know without getting too involved in things. Without getting too caught up in our ideas of judging, favoring and opposing. I'm sure you've all heard of the, by now, very famous words of Pope Francis when he was asked about gay marriage or something like that, and he responded by saying, "Who am I to judge?" Of course, the answer to that question is, you're the Pope. Right? Who am I to judge? Yeah? They're very powerful words, aren't they? Huh? So next time you find yourself sitting there criticizing the person sitting next to you, because they're breathing the wrong way, then just remind yourself, I'm not the Pope. I've got a lot less reason to be going around judging people. So all the things I've spoken about so far are all the general qualities that we should be developing in any meditation retreat or any spiritual context. And what I want to talk about for the remainder of this talk today is a little bit more specific, and to talk about how to develop metta meditation. So I'm going to do this bit by bit. I'm not going to try to talk about the whole thing this morning. I'll just introduce some of the basic concepts this morning. And then I'll leave you to practice at this, today, and I'll talk more about it tonight. So first things first, what do we mean when we talk about metta, talk about loving kindness? So from a Buddhist point of view, what we mean by loving kindness is a feeling, an emotion, which is connected with, or the outcome of, the wholesome wish for the happiness of oneself and for all sentient beings. So the cause of metta, the cause of loving kindness, is to have that wish. The wish that may you be happy, may all beings be happy, as we recite in the Metta Sutta. And the result of the loving kindness, the actual loving kindness itself, is a feeling that you experience in your meditation. So what we can do when we develop the meditation is we can put into place the causes. Right? We can do those things which will clarify our own intention, bring to mind that wish that we have for happiness. We can shed our doubts, shed our confusion. And by making this more fully conscious, we get in touch with a feeling of loving kindness. Now, one of the characteristics of Buddhist meditation, any kind of real Buddhist meditation, is it's based on a reality. Right? The Buddha wasn't interested in making up fantasy worlds. So if you look at how the Buddha taught to meditate, he always said to meditate on the breath, it's something real. Or you meditate on the elements that make up the body, it's something real. Or you meditate on the impermanence of things, it's something real. In the same way, when we meditate on loving kindness, we're meditating on something real. Right? Think about what the implication of this is. If metta, if loving kindness is something real, then that implies that you already have it. You already have loving kindness in your heart. The word that we use for meditation in Buddhism is the word bhavana, which means to make more of something. Literally, it means to make more of something. So when we talk about metta bhavana, we translate that as the meditation on loving kindness. But the literal translation of metta bhavana is to make more of your loving kindness. You already have it. It's already inside you. The purpose of the meditation is not to create it, not to make it be there. The purpose is to become conscious of it. And by becoming conscious of it, we can make it grow. We can make it vivid and clear. And we can train ourselves If we do this often enough, we can train ourselves to be able to simply go within any time we want and find that heart of loving kindness inside ourselves. Isn't that something amazing? Isn't that an astonishing thing to be able to do as a human being? To think, love is not something rare. It's not something I have to go searching for. It's not something which is fragile or difficult to find. It's something which is there inside all of you. And you can find it just by turning your mind in the right way. And loving kindness is one of the basic formative forces of the human mind. Don't trust me on this. Don't even trust the Buddha on it. Go ask the psychologist and ask him about how children grow. We recite in the Metta Sutra about the Metta is the love that a mother has for their child. And one of the things that has been emphasized more and more in contemporary psychology and developmental psychology is how when the infant is born and when they're very young, especially when they're very young, that the love of the mother is something which creates their mind. It's not just a feeling that they have from time to time, but the very fact that they can have a consciousness which is coherent and formed and works together is created by that atmosphere of love that they have as a child. So we are formed and created by love at a very, very fundamental level. And we know that this force is present in our families, in our friendships, in our relationships. Of course, it gets lost, it gets confused. Sometimes we look and we think, where did that go? Of course, it's problematic and complex, and of course, sometimes we expect it there and it's not, and all of those things. But still, we know what it is. And I think we have some sense of what the difference is between love, between real metta and real loving kindness, and attachment. Simply put, the difference is that attachment always wants to get something. Right? So when you're in a relationship that's based on attachment, I love you because you make me happy. Because you give me what I want. And so as long as you're in that kind of relationship, then there's never any freedom. It's based on a contract. Right? I'll love you as long as you give me what I want. And of course, in that kind of relationship, the time always comes when that person is not going to give you what you want. Right? That's just a matter of time. Usually not all that long. And then you suffer. Then you give me what I want. And you become needy and grasping. And this is where the tensions in relationships come from. So instead of loving somebody because they make me happy and because they give me what I want, right, real metta says, I want to make you happy. Real metta is based on giving. There's a lovely description of this, a very simple but beautiful description of this in the description of the monk's lifestyle, where it talks about species. There's a lovely sutta called the Chula Gosinga Sutta, and it talks about three monks who were living together, Anuruddha, Kimbila and Nandiya, and the Buddha asks them about how they live, and they say that whenever the thought arises, this is what I'd like to do, then I think to myself, why don't I put aside what I want to do and do what these other venerables want to do? Right? And then the important part is the next sentence. Once the thoughts have risen, then I in fact put aside what I want to do and do what those venerables do. I don't just think about it. I actually do it. Right? And that is real loving kindness. Yeah. So the existence, the reality of loving kindness is something which is very ordinary, which is part of all of our human relationships. The special thing that we offer through the meditation is the ability to refine that, to empower it, to turn it from something which is merely one feeling or one motivation or one emotion sort of jostling for space with a bunch of other things, right? We turn it from being something like that to being something which is whole and one and extreme. And by doing so, we make it so powerful. It becomes transformative. When we take out the qualifications and the doubts and the worries and the suspicions, and we come back to what is just that pure feeling of loving kindness, utterly simple. Then it becomes a force that can purify our mind and lead to a deepening and a radiance of our consciousness. So how do we do this? How do we get from the kind of messed up, complex space that we're in now to that kind of transcendence? Well, it's a long road. It will be a complex one, and you'll all walk it in your own different ways. But at least, hopefully, it will be somewhat fun. Typically, when we're about to embark on a journey, the best step to take is the first one. Not wanting to overgeneralize here, but on the whole, that's what I've found works. So what's the first step? Well, first step is to love yourself. I mean, it's so characteristic of the human mind that we think we can go and, you know, fix everybody else's problem. I can love everybody else, but I just can't love myself. So don't worry about these things, don't pay any attention to them. Actually, again, come back to the reality of things. The reality of things is that we actually do love ourselves. And that love of ourselves, if it becomes twisted, we call it narcissism, ego, conceit. Yeah. But what we're talking about with metta is none of those things. You are a sentient being. You are all conscious. At least semi-conscious. And you're just as much deserving of love as anybody else. So when we begin the loving kindness meditation, we begin just by saying, may I be happy. That's all. And the mind wanders off, wanders here, wanders there, brings up all these doubts and so on and so forth. And we just come back to those words. Don't try to second guess things. Don't make it complicated. Don't try to psychoanalyze the meditation. Right? You go find a therapist for that. Okay? Meditation is not the time for working on your issues. Right? Meditation is the time for coming back to and focusing on what is the most simple and most beautiful forces that we have in our minds. So just accept yourself. When you begin the meditation, remind yourself of all of the good things that you've done. Remind yourself of the fact, oh, here I am on this retreat. I've given up all these things to come and practice meditation. Remind yourself, oh, I've kept these precepts. Remind yourself of that act of kindness, opening the door for somebody, walking quietly into the room, oh, giving somebody a glass of water, giving somebody a smile. All of these are acts of kindness and acts of love. Remind yourself of all of the kind things that you've done this past week. The times that you've given somebody some food, or that you've helped somebody with a job, or that you've let somebody go first, or you've given somebody a word of support, or you've given somebody a minute of your time and attention. And all of us have done these things. There's nothing special about them. That's just ordinary human behavior. But we tend to overlook it. We tend to not notice it. You can go through the day and do 100 kind things, and at the end of the day, all you can think about is the one nasty thing that you've done. Right? And all the kind things, you dismiss them. Right? You do something for somebody, they say thank you. You say, it was nothing. Right? It was nothing. You should banish that phrase from your vocabulary. Next time somebody says thank you, you say, yes, it was very kind of me, wasn't it? It's not nothing. My goodness, it's one of the most amazing things in the world. The fact that we're completely, we can be kind to each other. Right? Not nothing. So when we do this meditation, may I be happy. First thing we do is try to get the words right. At least we can do that much. So when I say get the words right, I mean to say the words clearly and distinctly. Bringing a confidence and evenness and a steadiness to them. My Thai meditation teacher told me to say the words like Shakespeare. I don't quite know what he meant by that. Say it like Shakespeare. Mayest thou be happy? I don't know. But I think what he meant was that you bring like a clarity and a definition to the words. Right? Often when we're in meditation, we tend to drift, you know, and the words become kind of mumbled, yeah, indistinct. So bring a strength to them. Say them with confidence and clarity. Right? Each part of the meditation, right? Each thing that we're doing in the meditation has its purpose. And each, the care and the attention that we bring to each aspect of the meditation will pay off later down the road. We won't necessarily see that at the beginning. So you have to have a bit of trust when you begin the meditation. I'll talk more about this later on, but for now, I just want to raise this point up, that the quality of your meditation in the long term is conditioned by the care and attention that you bring to laying the groundwork. Okay? So put a lot of attention into that, just making the words right. Even if that's all that you do, that's still pretty good. Okay? You're powerfully developing the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, Sammasankappa, right thought, right intention, right motivation. There's a sutta where the Buddha talks about this, the Dvaidamitaka Sutta, and he talks about developing this factor, and he says, well, I could think like this all day and all night, and I'd never bring any harm to anybody. So if it's good enough for the Buddha to develop this kind of right thought, it's good enough for you. So we keep bringing attention back to those words. When we feel that we're clear and that the words are strong, then we can reflect or bring to awareness also the meaning of the words. I'm not saying to think about the meaning of the words, but I'm just saying you look in and you say, what these words are doing is that they're making contact with this wish to be happy. Everybody here wants to be happy. So by saying these words, we're evoking this wish. We're making it conscious. Now, all the time as we're doing this, we should be keeping the focus of our awareness inside your body. Okay? Right from the beginning of the meditation. So what I mean by that is that you direct your attention inside your chest, inside your heart, inside some other part of your body until you can feel that physically, and then you keep your attention there as you say the words of metta. Okay? Now if this is not clear to you, if you're not quite sure how to do this, then before you doing the practice of metta, just sit there and just be aware, just practice more body awareness. We already talked about this last night in the talk about mindfulness. So about how to gradually move the mind around the different parts of your body and be aware of the sensations that you feel. So we're getting our consciousness grounded in our body, getting it unified and centered. Okay? So this is very important for being able to develop the metta in a way and that will become much more profound and much more unified. It stops it from being scattered. Okay? So we bring that awareness in, we say those words of metta, mind goes off, wanders off, you think about this and that, don't worry about it, bring it back in. You have these worries, these anxieties, this whatever, don't worry about it. Don't make a big deal about it. Just come back and bring your mind back to the words. That's what's important. Remember, when you're doing the meditation is what's important, okay? None of that other stuff is, okay? This is something that's very difficult to keep in mind when you're practicing. When you're sitting there meditating, you'll get this like twitch in your left ear, right? And you'll be going, oh my God, that's so vitally important. The fate of the whole universe depends on what this twitch in my left ear is all about, right? And you go there and you focus, oh, why is that happening? And right? That's unbelievable. Our sense of priorities gets completely shifted. And these things that are completely meaningless suddenly become so desperately important. Forget about all that. Forget about the sounds around you. Forget about all your thoughts and ideas. All of that stuff. Just don't worry about it. They'll all come back to you. Now, at that time when you're meditating, only one thing matters. And that is the meditation. It's through your meditation that you will find peace. It's through the meditation that you will find happiness. It will be through the meditation that you will find letting go. And it's through the meditation that ultimately you will find enlightenment. Not through any of those other things. So be clear in your mind, before you sit down to meditate, what is your intention? If you're going to do metta meditation, make that clear in your mind. When you sit to meditate, this is my time for doing metta meditation and nothing else. Right? So if your mind is clear, your intention is clear, then it will be easy for you to just keep on coming back to those words of loving kindness. Now, as we continue, as we deepen our attention with those words, little bit by little bit, what will come up with those words is a feeling. That's the feeling of loving kindness. And that feeling has the qualities of being, the most important quality that the feeling of loving kindness has the quality of joy. It's a happy feeling. If it's not happy, it's not loving kindness, it's something else. So there's always a happiness to it, there's a warmth to it, there's an ease to it. sometimes, especially at the beginning, it might be quite exciting. It might be quite overwhelming. You get very strong feelings. That's okay, just let them ride them out. But the real metta, the real loving kindness, is peaceful. And the other quality that the loving kindness has is that it should be grounded inside your body. So if you feel like your mind's sort of out there, and you have that feeling, then just gently bring it back in, so that you feel it inside your body. So when we're meditating, we always keep going with those words, may I be happy, may I be happy, so on. Always keep on going with those. But when the feeling is starts to become apparent to us, we bring that feeling in and keep that feeling close. It's almost like you're sort of using the words to gather up the feeling and to keep it close. And we just keep the attention with the feeling, and we keep on nurturing and holding that. There's a beautiful simile that the Buddha uses talking about meditation. He says that the kind of attention you bring to meditation is like you're holding a little bird in your hand. So if you're holding a little bird, if you hold it too loosely, then it'll fly away. And if you hold it too tight, then you'll crush it. Yeah. So you have to hold it just right. Yeah. Very, very carefully, so that you can keep it safe. Keep it right there. Yeah. So this is a quality of attention that we bring in the meditation. It's the most important thing to learn in meditation. Right? How do we pay attention? Normally, we're either one of those two extremes. We're either pushing too hard, too tight, or we're just too loose and let it go. So just enough to be with that and to keep it there. And when you have that quality of mind which is just enough, right, you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed at how easy and how quickly and how smoothly your meditation goes. Yeah, everything just starts to come together. And you realize that actually all that time that you were sitting there trying to meditate, you weren't actually meditating. You were trying. And that's a completely different kind of thing. So instead of trying to do metta, we just do it. Now, if we can develop the metta meditation to that extent, and we can hold that feeling, bring the mind to that feeling with words, may I be happy, and we keep the mind there, then as we keep our attention, gradually the feeling will become more clear. The mind works on mind always works on feedback processes. Right? Whenever you pay attention in a certain way, the mind feeds back on itself. Right? So if you have an angry feeling, then creates an angry thought, and then the angry thought creates an angry feeling, and then the angry feeling creates more angry thoughts, and it keeps on going round and round and round. That's how the mind works. It's feedback mechanisms. So if you keep on paying attention to that feeling of metta, with the words of metta there, bringing everything together, then the feeling will gradually grow. It'll become more clear, more definite, more stable, stronger. And so what you're seeing, right, is you're seeing the shift from where loving kindness was a mysterious, unfathomable, uncontrollable force that went through your mind and came and went with like just like the wind and the rain. That's how our emotions are normally, aren't they? They come and they go and we don't understand them. We don't know why it's there. We don't know why it's not there. Where has it come from? Where has it gone? And by the time we figured that out, we've got something else. And we have got to figure that out. That's how our emotions work. It was getting chaotic. But we're starting to see that actually that's not the case. Emotions are not chaotic. They're not mysterious. They're just conditioned like anything else. And so what we've done through this meditation is we've put into play all of the conditions that are helpful for the arising of loving kindness. And so because of that, the feeling will become stronger and more steady. And actually, rather than just coming and going every few minutes or something, it will last longer and longer and longer. Now, eventually, when you're skilled at the meditation, you'll be able to sit down there, turn your mind towards that feeling of metta, bring it into your mind and keep it whenever you want and keep it there as long as you want. Okay? That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Right? It's not that difficult. You can do that. Yeah. And so that gives you this incredible confidence and this incredible feeling of contentment in your heart, that you know that no matter what happens, you can always find that. Right? Even if they were to come and grab you and throw you in jail, never mind. Have a nice quiet cell. You can get up and meditate. And you can still find peace and happiness there. I had a good friend of mine in Sydney who was thrown into jail a couple of years ago. And he was very happy because his cellmate was also a meditator, so they used to get up early in the morning and meditate. Imagine that. Imagine that you felt so much contentment and peace inside your own heart that no matter what happens, you'd be okay. Right? Now, maybe this isn't going to happen for you just yet. Maybe you're going to be sitting there and meditating and you look into your heart and it's just like this apocalyptic wasteland. It's dust. The Buddha called it the Jeddo Kila, the wasteland of the heart. And you look and you think, maybe other people might have feelings. But I don't have any feelings. Where have they gone? And sometimes this is really kind of shocking and also and kind of disturbing to find out. You know, you look into your mind and you think, I don't have any feelings anymore. I used to have feelings. I remember those. I used to feel like joy and excitement and sadness and stuff. And then I got old and I couldn't afford to have feelings anymore. I had to cope. And I put my feelings in a box and they became too complicated and there was too much history with them. And all those things that used to be so fun, love and romance and adventure and discovery and all, they used to be fun, but then it just became too complicated and too hard. And I put them away one by one. I said, I just can't deal anymore. I've got a mortgage to think about. I've got to get to work on time. I can't have feelings. And we gradually go through our life and we put these things away. And we look at children and we look at young people and we see how spontaneous they are and how intuitive they are and how. And we think, where did that go? And because the reality is that it hasn't really gone anywhere. You might have put those things away. You might have closed them up. But they're still part of you. It's just a matter of habit and conditioning. Okay? So the fact that we do that, right, it's very understandable, and there's not necessarily anything wrong with it. I mean, we we manage emotions because we need to cope, right? And coping is not a bad thing, right? It's better than the alternative. Yeah? But sometimes it's just that we take things too far. So rather than sort of managing our emotions and learning to deal with them and live with them, we deny them and we repress them. And so that's what happens sometimes. And then we're looking for that connection. We're looking to get back to that feeling, and we come to do meditation or something, and we look and it's just not there. So if that's the case, if while you're meditating, if you're finding it difficult to contact that feeling of metta and the feeling of loving kindness, don't worry about it. It's okay. Yeah. Doesn't mean that you don't have any love in you. Doesn't mean that you're really just a dried up husk of a human being. Right? Yeah. It just means that you haven't contacted those feelings yet, that's all. It means that there's a journey in front of you. So be patient, take your time. In the talk this evening, I'll talk a little bit more about this, and I'll talk about some ways that we can use to try to help to make that feeling come alive if that's not working for us. But I don't want to give you those things just yet, because I want you to just take it very simply, and I want you to look into your heart. I just want you to practice as we've been talking about so far, and we'll see how that goes for today. Right? So actually, I was supposed to do a half an hour talk this morning, and it's turned into an hour long talk, but there you go. So we don't have time for a guided meditation, but that's all right. So what I want you to do for today, you know, if you're interested to practice this metta meditation, you'd like to do some of it, then, you know, do metta at, say, every second sitting that you do. Don't try to do it at every sitting. Especially if you have a meditation practice that you're already familiar with, and keep that practice, but just alternate. So one sitting of metta, one sitting of breath meditation, or whatever it might be, or other meditation, okay? And then during the metta meditation, you sit as long as you feel comfortable and enthusiastic about it. Don't force it, don't push it, okay? And just do the practice, sit down, be mindful, be aware, bring to mind the words, may I be happy, make the words clear, and succinct, clear and distinct. And as you're continuing with the words, focusing inside your body, see if you can find that feeling of loving kindness. Okay, and when you do find that feeling of loving kindness, just gently hold it in your mind, and you keep it there, keep it safe for as long as you can. Okay, so this is the practice for today, and by doing that a few times during the day, you'll get some kind of sense for what I'm talking about. Maybe you'll feel some feeling of metta, maybe you won't, that's okay. Maybe you'll feel some feeling and you'll go, I don't know if this is the right feeling or not. Don't worry. It's the right feeling. Any feeling is the right feeling, okay? It's just what you feel, that's all. Don't worry about it. Okay? So, but just be open, and remember that this practice of metta meditation, it is an opening practice, and it is an emotional practice. So while you're doing it and while you're proceeding, okay, the feeling, the soft and gentle and warm and lovely feeling of metta is not going to be the only thing that you feel, right? And in fact, especially in the beginning, many things will come up, yeah? And you will feel strong sadness and grief, sometimes sometimes a lot of anger, right? We start to do metta meditation, we're like, what is this? I'm here to do loving kindness, and I'm here with all of these nice people, and all I can think of is all these horrible thoughts of revenge and nastiness. Like, no, don't worry about it. These are just... this is just a mind finding its own balance. Sometimes it's That's just how it is. The mind's tricky. You start doing the metta meditation and then the anger comes up more than ever. You're starting to open. You're starting to see what's there. So again, just to be patient. Don't be judgmental. Don't be worried about these things, right? We're here to overcome greed, hatred and delusion. Remember that. Greed, hatred and delusion. Everybody has greed, hatred and delusion, right? Unless you are fully enlightened, okay? Which, if you are, congratulations. But for the rest of us, we have greed, hatred and delusion. It's all right. It's okay. Greed is only greed. Hatred's only hatred. Delusion's only delusion. So what? Right? I mean, these things are very powerful forces, right? This is what the Buddha said. These things are very powerful forces. They are more powerful than everything in the world, right? Except for their opposites. Right? Letting go is more powerful than greed. Love is more powerful than hate. Wisdom is more powerful than delusion. And when we're practicing the Eightfold Path and practicing the Dhamma, we have those powerful forces on our side. So don't be worried when the anger comes, the confusion comes, the doubt comes, all of those things. Just remind yourself, when you're practicing this path, all of these things will be overcome. That's just part of the journey, part of the understanding what these things are. All right? So we should probably finish around there. We're about ready to start for the interviews. So I will see the how do we say interviewees? No, interview candidates. Interview the